Good morning, and welcome to another Tuesday edition of Community Conversations, playing again as the morning show with sometimes in live studio host Julie Calabine. And Julie and I, Phil Huff, are recording this as we have been as the COVID pandemic still continues on in our region. It's actually amazing the spike in recent cases, Julie.
It is, Phil, and I'm sometimes studio presence, but always a recording partner with you. I'm so happy to see you again this week.
Yes, thank you for clarifying that, and happy to see you. And what have you been up to?
Oh, well, two kind of interesting things. I hope Dexter doesn't sort of drum them out with barking in the background. I'll get rid of that little guy in a minute if that continues. But anyway, two things. One has been as a volunteer with Idaho Trails Association, I have been lucky enough to spend a weekend with some wonderful women up at Chimney Rock and work on the trail there. That was a couple of weekends ago. And it's interesting coincidence that our guest today was one of them, and we'll be introducing her in a moment. But in the meantime, Carolyn Knock, wasn't it fun?
Yeah, it was a really beautiful weekend. That was when the big rain came, and it was really, you know, huckleberry picking, and we got a slight peek at Chimney Rock. It was a really beautiful weekend.
Yes, through the clouds. We may get back to that, but it was certainly a good day to work on trails, not too hot.
The rains have been just absolutely fabulous. In the last few days, I've enjoyed being able to get out and walk again and bike into town and breathe the air while I was doing it. So, you know, hopefully, and it looks like they may continue at least for a while to help scrub the skies and dampen down the wildfires.
I sure hope so. And Phil, relating to that, I was in Libby, Montana yesterday and the day before, and that was for a Scotchman Peaks related volunteer event. And it was one of the more interesting and fun things I've done lately. A friend, I think we all know him in the community, or many of us, Don Childress, who's a fishing friend of mine, agreed to volunteer a day on one of the local rivers as part of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks online auction. And a lovely lady and her husband won. And on Wednesday, we just spent a wonderful day on the Kootenai River catching trout and learning about one another. It was delightful.
What a great way to spend a Wednesday.
It was wonderful.
Much more interesting than many of the boring meetings I was in.
Well, it all goes to a good cause, Phil. Some of us have to do the hard work. Some have to get out there and, you know, take care of the fun stuff.
Yeah, thank you. So let's, moving along towards what makes our community so robust, we're delighted to once again feature one of our fine nonprofit community organizations and their associate director. And so while Julie is quieting the Dexter dog down in the background, I will introduce Carolyn Knock from the Lake Pend'Oreille Waterkeepers Associate Director. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thanks, Phil and Julie, for having me. I'm really excited to be back with you guys.
You're still relatively new to your position, and a lot of people probably don't know you because in this time with the COVID pandemic, it's so hard to get out and meet people. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to work for the Waterkeepers.
Well, I'm really fortunate to have this position. I'm from Washington originally and studied biology at the University of Washington, Seattle. And my first exposure to the Waterkeepers was through Gray Henderson, who's on the board of directors. And I was taking a limnology class in the fall, which is the study of freshwater ecosystems like rivers, lakes, and streams. And what they do with the citizen science water quality monitoring is limnology. And he's like, why don't you come out with me on my boat when I do the monitoring? And you can kind of learn, get a preview of your limnology class. And so I kind of learned about the Waterkeeper organization then, met a few of the other volunteers. And then I took the class in the fall and I loved it. I realized that I really wanted to kind of pursue a career in limnology and freshwater ecosystems. And so after college, I did an internship with the Forest Service doing stream surveys in Mount Hood. And when that season came to a close, I got the opportunity to come work in the office with the Waterkeeper as a part-time job. And so I worked with the Waterkeeper from like December 2019 to the May of 2020, just kind of like a part-time helping in the office. And then I went back to the Forest Service for another season doing stream surveys. And then as that season came to a close, Steve gave me the offer of coming back on to the Waterkeeper as the full-time position as the associate director. And so I've been back in Sandpoint working full time for the Waterkeeper since last December, and I'm loving it. I love this job and working for the Waterkeeper and living in Sandpoint. It's been really wonderful. I feel really lucky.
Yeah, it's a great town, and what a great organization to be working for in this town. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really awesome. And I feel really fortunate to have a job in the kind of career path that I really like to do, which is working outside, doing community engagement, doing education programs and such. And I get to do a lot of stuff, which keeps me entertained. It keeps me busy. So
share with us a favorite moment from the last year, if you would. Pick it
up. I guess I really love working with kids. That's been one of my favorite parts of this job. I've done a couple of volunteer opportunities with the Pend'Oreille Water Festival and at the Water Life Discovery Center, working with field trips. And at both of those events, I got to teach kids about aquatic macroinvertebrates, which is like bugs that live in like aquatic ecosystems. And I learned about them when I was in college, and I had no idea what they were until college. And so getting to teach, you know, little kids in like third and fifth grade about these bugs and why they're important and how you can use them, you know, as scientists, how you can be scientists and determine the quality of the water. And I got to go and collect the bugs for my Waterkeeper Wednesdays program, which is really fun to go out in the streams and the ponds. And then you bring them back, put them in a bucket, and then kids get a bunch of spoons and magnifying glasses and get to observe these bugs and look at them and identify them. And it's what I love doing. And it's really fun to get kids excited about it and to kind of learn about how something so fun as looking at bugs is like science, and and how it can tie to so many different parts of an ecosystem.
I know this isn't on our agenda, but I want to explore this a little further. I've always been a little bit amused by the term macroinvertebrate, because it makes you envision something large, and yet it's these tiny bugs. So yeah. Is there a microinvertebrate? What's the opposite of a macroinvertebrate?
Well, what we tell the kids is a macroinvertebrate is just something without a spine that you can see without like a magnifying glass. And so it is a really large category of organisms. But like a microinvertebrate is something like zooplankton and phytoplankton. So things that you need to see under a microscope in order to observe and identify.
Good.
Okay. So macro means visible to the human eye, basically, in this instance. Got it.
And micro is like underneath the microscope.
Yep. Yeah. Micro, microscope, macro, no microscope.
Well, Carolyn, you do a number of things for Waterkeeper. Why don't you give us a short list of your job description? What are you responsible for there?
Well, as I mentioned previously, I work with our educational programs. And so I volunteer at other educational events. And then I've been hosting our Waterkeeper Wednesdays program. And I've been hosting that this summer. It's the first year we've done it. And I just go to Creations in Cedar Street Bridge, which is downstairs from our office, and host a free educational water-based activity for kids. And my last one is going to be on August 25th, which is going to be the day after this airs. And we're going to be learning about fish, fish shapes and sizes. And so that's really fun. And then I also do our outreach, so through emails and our semi-annual reports. Distribute those throughout town. I manage our social media accounts, so we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, we do research and organize our volunteer events. So we have our water quality monitoring program, which is run by volunteers, and so I've been managing that program, organizing and recruiting and training volunteers, overseeing if there's any issues, scheduling problems. Manage our website, kind of a little bit of everything.
Busy. You're very busy. Yeah. That's a lot. And there was one thing. Oh, go ahead.
I was just to say, you keep things moving along and rolling. The door is open and programs happening.
It's just, I keep, it keeps me on my toes. In the office, it's just me and Steve. So, if something comes up, whoever's, best to handle it, we just kind of divide it between the two of us. There's some things that I like more, there's some things that Steve likes more. So you just kind of roll with it as it comes.
That's right. Well, there was one thing you were intending to tell us about for this interview that isn't going to be able to happen this year. Why don't we cover that just for a minute and then move on to current issues you're working on at Waterkeeper, but it was your event.
Yeah, it was our, we were going to plan a stand-up paddleboard race on Labor Day to celebrate our 12th birthday and kind of as a fundraiser to support our organization. But due to the COVID numbers that are raising in the area, we decided it was better to cancel the event. But we're really hoping we can do a stand-up paddleboard race in the future. We think it'd be a really great way to get people on the water and to kind of raise awareness about our organization and what we do.
And it sounds like fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be really fun to just get a big group of people paddling on the water.
Now, that does sound fun.
As you figure out a future date, since you're new, just remember, the lake cools down in the winter. So you're good into September for temperatures, but that water is going to get darn cold by November.
Yeah, we're trying to get it. We were going to do it in Sand Creek, since the water's really paddleable and it goes underneath our office. And the scenery is beautiful. But we were trying to have it before the water went down as well. Yeah.
There's that seasonal adjustment to Sand Creek too. It's mostly mud by November.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, it'll be next year, most likely. We'll look forward to hearing about it then. So in lieu of talking about that event, we've got plenty of other things to talk about. And there are a lot of threats to the water, and Waterkeeper is keeping track of those, which we're so happy about. And some of them that you've supplied us with relate to land use issues and development. Would you like to start with that?
Yeah, so right now I think we've all noticed the huge boom in development around Sandpoint and the influx of people coming in and new properties being developed. And so that's been one of the biggest issues that we've been seeing that's threatening the water quality of the lake. And so right now we're monitoring about 6 major development issues around our lake. And so there's the Boyer's Slough issue where all the shoreline vegetation got ripped out. There's Trestle Creek, which we're submitted a notice of intent to sue along with Idaho Conservation League and the Center for Biological Diversity. And that's still in motion. And then there's a few other issues around the Camp Bay and an RV park along the river, and then even in Fry Creek. And we've actually seen a couple of other issues pop up in those areas, such as harmful algae blooms. And so that's kind of, we've been shifting away from development and looking more at water quality and temperature and kind of the impact of development and the threat of it impacting or creating more harmful algae blooms as well.
There's a lot of detail with each of those. I watched your presentation at the Matchwood a few weeks ago, and very nicely done and very detailed. So much of it relies on visuals that we have a hard time portraying over the radio and detailed reports. On your website, is there a place where folks can go to find out more information about each of the potential projects and what the impacts are?
Yes. Yeah, we have a blog that's, if you go to our website, it's under our news and events. And we try and update our blog posts about what's going on and post pictures and details and why it's important that we monitor this development issue and how it could threaten the quality of the water.
Are there any that you'd like to highlight? I think a couple of them had actionable moments coming up at the end of August after this airs, which will be on August 24th.
There was a shoreline issue with the city, but that's been postponed. And then I can't remember the exact dates. I'm going to be honest with you, but we will post updates on our Facebook page. That's where we post the most recent and updated information about these issues and hearings and meetings that people can attend. And if they have any questions about these meetings that we post, they're always welcome to either message us on Facebook, call the office, or contact us through our website.
Yeah, so I'm curious, how does Waterkeeper interact with, say, for example, the city or the county in terms of land use? Do you provide information that can be helpful when they're making land use decisions? I would think that you would have good information to provide in terms of water and maintaining water quality.
A lot of it is a lot of the issues that we've been monitoring is we haven't heard directly from the city, but a concerned neighbor, someone who's seen the construction had concerns about it, and so they forward pictures to us and we investigate it, we research and obtain the permits, and we read the permits, we attend hearings and submit comments, and kind of provide information. If we have a water quality monitoring site, we can provide information about nutrient levels in that area, such as in Boyer Slough. With a reduction of shoreline vegetation, it increases the potential for stormwater pollution to enter the lake. And Boyer Slough is already impaired for phosphorus, and it actually has an algae bloom going on right now. So it's really imperative that homeowners are aware of how they can reduce stormwater pollution from adding to the pollution that's already in the water, such as in Boyer Slough.
Yeah, that's made the news. And by the news, I mean actually the television news, where you can see images unlike radio, and they're pretty stark. Tell us a little bit about the blue-green algae bloom, because we often associate that with lakes that are shallower that are south of here. So I don't think folks around Lake Pendere are as familiar with what the appearance is like, what the impacts are when it occurs.
Yeah, harmful algae blooms are a serious issue. And I believe they're not as common around Lake Pendere because it's such a big, deep lake, and it we have so much water flowing through. But since it's been really hot, and with all the development, there's increased nutrients going to the water, and those are two of the biggest causes of harmful algae blooms. And they're a microinvertebrate, a microorganism that when they can take over a habitat, and it looks really green and scummy. And just discolors the water. It looks like something you wouldn't want to swim in, basically. And then it can reduce the quality of the water so much that it can make people sick, it can make dogs sick, and you're unable to treat it for drinking water. So if people take their drinking water from sloughs, then it can make them sick, it can make their dog sick. And so it's really important not to ingest the water there. So when we look at if there's a harmful algae bloom, such as in a Sagal Slough and a Boyer Slough, we make sure that no one's pulling water. If we're able to see that and notify people that don't go swimming, don't go boating. If you catch fish, make sure you remove kind of the fatty tissues and try and wash your hands afterwards. Don't let your dogs go swimming.
So, does it dissipate on its own, or is it necessary to treat it? And what's the prognosis either way?
The Department of Environmental Quality and Panhandle Health have been the ones issuing the health advisory warnings, and they monitor the harmful algae blooms until they go away. And so they do go away on their own. It's just a matter of kind of flushing and kind of letting them live out their life cycle. Yeah, it's just kind of waiting away. There's not really a treatment that we can do to
go away. It dissipates. You can't really suck that water out and replace it with other water. Yeah. Like you might hand pull or suction the weed. But it will eventually deteriorate, and it doesn't leave as long term and lasting impact as, say, some pesticides might be if there were a treatment for it that way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good to know, and good to keep our eyes out for. And then another cautionary tale of why taking care of the shoreline and not allowing or discouraging the development that will impact that has such a big bearing on it. And of course, the bigger question of heat. I'm assuming this summer's record-setting heat has something to do with the blooms there. Can you tell us more about that? How has the heat impacted the water?
Well, we've noticed the temperature of the lake has been as probably most people have noticed, extremely hot this year with the heat wave and the lack of spring rains. And so we, for our water quality monitoring program, we monitor 13 locations around the lake. And in July, when the volunteers were bringing back their data forms, I was looking at the temperatures, and I was shocked at how warm the water was compared to June. And so we take the temperature of the surface water, and then we take the temperature of the water at Secchi depth, which is the transparency of the water changes. And so they change between sites. So in the sloughs, it could be just a few meters. And then in places like Garfield Bay and Bayview, it's, 8 or 10 meters. So a huge difference. And so in most of our sites, the temperature at the surface and at Psyche depth was the same temperature, which means that, the heat is seeping down through the water column. And the temperature has a really big impact on the water quality, because increased temperature can lead to decreased oxygen. Warmer water just can't hold as much dissolved oxygen. And so it can impact the habitat. So fish often have to migrate to different areas of the lake to find enough oxygen. And then if there's really hot water and low dissolved oxygen and there's nutrients coming in, then it can lead to an algae bloom, which then also reduces, habitat for fish. And it just kind of makes, you don't want to go fishing there. You don't want to go swimming there. You don't want to pull your water from there. And so it's...
Julie and I often have guests on to talk about our fisheries. It's such a complex, complicated question of the management of the fisheries. And Julie, you've probably been out there more than many people. So I'd redirect this question to you. How has this summer's heat impacted the fishing on the lake to the best of your knowledge?
Well, I haven't fished very much on Lake Pend Oreille. I'd normally do that in the spring when the northern pike are out there. My fishing is mainly trout stream fishing, but everything's been warmer this year, and it makes for slower fishing. And in Montana, hoot owl restrictions, meaning that you can't really fish in the middle of the day so that the fish are not stressed. It's just a really rough year for fish. And adding nutrients to the waters and pollutants. We're seeing, for example, when I was on the Kootenai River the other day, we saw a lot of, I believe it's a form of algae. Carolyn, you'll probably know this, but I think it's an algae, but maybe it's something else. It's called Didymo. It's a very kind of slimy, is it bacteria? What is that stuff? Anyway, it was more prevalent in the Kootenai than I've seen before. So, yeah, things are happening with the heat and the lack of water inflow.
Yeah, algae is a natural part of a lake ecosystem, so it's not unusual to see it. But I think this year with the heat, there's been way more reports of algae across the country, really. And because we're part of a worldwide waterkeeper organization, and so there's over 350 other waterkeeper organizations across the world. Can we try and keep up with what's happening in their watersheds and see if they relate to ours? And this summer, I've seen just so many reports of harmful algae blooms and red tides in Florida and other terrible algae blooms, such as like in the Gallatin River near Big Sky, Montana, that are threatening the habitat, the cold water fish habitat there.
Right. That's really true. And one local example that I'm sure you are aware of, Phil, and probably you, Carolyn, is that the Priest River, which is sort of a marginal trout stream and a good year because it has a lot of warming in the summer, had a good sized fish die off, and yeah. I imagine more to come. And that's due to the warm temps.
Yeah, lots of things that we just don't really know yet. And those things we do, we can see some dire notices. The Didymo, I think, is a natural occurrence, but it's been spread unnaturally, and it's been a problem throughout much of the West. I know a few outdoor writers who have written about it. And there are places where there's requirements for what you can and can't wear on your feet in the river and how you have to clean them so you don't transfer it from one stream to another.
Yes, absolutely.
Because, again, yeah, I think they suck the oxygen out and make it a poor environment for the trout.
Yeah, for example, in Lake Superior in Minnesota, Didymo exists, but it doesn't get out of balance. But in some of the trout streams, for whatever reason, it grows more than it's supposed to. Maybe the warming and cooling, I don't quite understand the dynamics of it, but it's quite prevalent right now in the stretches of the Kootenai I've been fishing.
Good reminders. So, Carol, with so many things to keep up on, and this is a leading question to our next topic. How does one engage with the waterkeepers to find out more about what is happening at the waterkeepers?
Well, we try and keep our website up to date, and we post on Facebook a bunch for kind of news alerts and share relevant articles on there. We send out a monthly email newsletter with kind of current updates, new blog articles, kind of general information, upcoming events, and people can sign up for email newsletter on our website at the bottom of our front page. And then we're also active on Twitter and Instagram. And then if people want to ever call us, they can always call the office and the phone number's on our website, and or just stop in. We're in the Cedar Street Bridge in downtown Sandpoint, and I love when people come in and we can chat with them. And we also have we've started this new event called Keeping Up with a Waterkeeper. And Phil mentioned it earlier. It's a new monthly event that we're going to be hosting. And we hosted the first one at Matchwood, but now we're going to be hosting them online via Zoom to make them more accessible. And then we can record them and release them on our website and on YouTube so people can watch them later on. And we hosted our first one about current land use issues, but other topics that we're going to address are stormwater pollution, wastewater treatment, drinking water, herbicide and pesticide usage, and to kind of go over our water quality data from the past 10 years.
Yeah, and some of these things are things that a person can work on in their own property. Others, they really need to, if they want to make an impact, they need to sort of reach out to either the city or planning or something to make their preferences heard, I suppose, right? I mean, some things you're going to be able to do yourself, like keep track of how much pesticide and herbicide you use, but other areas like stormwater management, that's where citizens have to get involved and let our elected officials know that it's important to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are a grassroots organization. And so we really depend on the support of our community, both supporting our organization through donations and volunteer hours, but also in sending emails to our legislative officials and to the city, to the county, to the state, and kind of paying attention to what's happening and what's going to be discussed at planning and zoning meetings and what's being discussed among the commissioners, what variances are being allowed. And so, and we're not the only organization tracking these, and there's a bunch of really great organizations in the area kind of paying attention, which is really great. It's wonderful to know that, you know, there are people who are paying attention, that, you know, not just us, because there's a lot going on right now.
Yeah. There's so many issues right now, but there's always so many issues that what you're working on now is of great interest. What do you see on the horizon line? What's coming down the road that's going to be the next thing that occupies your time with the water keepers?
I honestly don't really see land development slowing down near in the future. We're getting, you know, a couple calls a week, at least, with people having concerns about development and new roads being paved and houses being built, properties being sold, septic systems being put in. I really don't see that slowing down anytime soon. And so that's something that we're really trying to get on top of. And then also managing with the population increasing, stormwater pollution is a really big concern to us. I think a lot of people aren't aware that stormwater, which is the rain and melting snow, runs through our streets, over our homes, over our lawns, goes into the drains around the streets and around the city, and then just ends up in our lake. It gets dumped unfiltered into Sand Creek and Lake Ponderay, and nobody's monitoring it. Besides us, we do some stormwater monitoring, but there's still stuff that flows continually into our lake and creek unfiltered. And so right now it's really important to us to kind of raise awareness about what is on our lawns and in our streets, and pet waste and litter and trash all drains to our lake and, you know, can end up hurting and impairing the organisms that live there. And it's where we get our drinking water. And so we're trying to, you know, protect our drinking water. We're really lucky to have such a big, beautiful, clean lake, but it's going to take the work of our whole community, you know, not just the water keeper, but for everyone to kind of pay attention and to know, you know, what their impact is on this, you know, really important community resource.
That's right. And Carolyn, there aren't that many communities that live right on Lake Ponderay. Sandpoint is one, and Clark Fork, and I suppose Bayview. Who else? I mean, there aren't too many other.
Hope, Dover.
Sure, Hope Kootenay, and Dover. Right.
Old, a little further down, Priest River.
Sure, on the river. It's an effort that all these communities are going to need to be aware of if we want to keep our water quality where it has been and in an acceptable level for people and animals and invertebrates.
So I'm seeing the potential too for runoff issues, sedimentation issues coming after this year's fires, either later this fall with fall rains or next spring, and particularly impacting the drainages up around Trestle Creek and Trout Creek. Depending on where all those go, of course, and even potentially Lightning Creek, which I don't know that that's been in the purview of the water keepers in the past to monitor for natural sedimentation, but I could see that becoming something that there would be an interest in.
Yeah, I've been trying to pay attention to what they've been doing along Trestle Creek, and I recently watched a video from Fish and Game about trying to, you know, monitor the bull trout habitat there and keep the water clean and kind of increase the habitat available there. But yeah, I've been thinking about that, and the snow and the spring runoff that might increase the sedimentation in Trestle Creek. And we don't do any stream monitoring, but I'd really like to increase our ability to kind of go out into the streams and, you know, track sedimentation and temperature and other stuff that's going on up there.
Right. And that's related to the resources that you have and the number of volunteers and sort of the donations, et cetera. So you're not a huge organization. They're just the two of you, you and Steve, and then I think the rest are volunteers. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot to do for a small organization.
Yeah. There's always something new that comes up and we're like, oh, we'd love to do that. But yeah, as a nonprofit and a really small organization, we depend very heavily on the kindness and generosity of our volunteers.
So we've talked around the edges of the water quality monitoring. You've made some references to it. We haven't spoken directly to that program very much yet. It's been one of the core programs of the Water Keepers. Is there more you'd like to say as we sort of wind down towards the close?
Yeah, well, I love our water quality monitoring program. So this has been the 10th year of our water quality monitoring program. We're the only entity monitoring the whole lake. And so we monitor 11 different parameters, and they include like temperature and nutrients and bacteria levels. And we train volunteers as citizen scientists, and we assign them a specific GPS location on the lake or the river. And they go out once a month from May through September, collect data and water samples, and they bring it back to the office. And I test it for dissolved oxygen and pH. Then I send off the rest of the bottles to a lab. And then we take all that data and we post it on our website in graphs that everyone can check out and use and see how data has changed over time. We have guideline limits for most of our parameters. So you can see if, you know, there's really high nutrient levels, and we try to explain, you know, what they mean. And it's a really amazing program. I think we have about 20 volunteers this year who dedicate their time, and I really love interacting with everyone. Some people have been doing it since the program started in 2012, and some people it's their first year doing it, and they just, you know, want to, you know, get out on the water and, you know, get back to our community. And some people are really involved in science and they love kind of learning about macroinvertebrates and the algae on the water. And so it's, everyone kind of has their own reason and interests for monitoring the water quality. And we're always looking for new volunteers. So if anyone is interested in volunteering for the program, please get a hold of me. It's a really wonderful way to spend time on the water and, you know, take care of the lake and give back to your community.
Carolyn, it's such a darn big lake. Do you try and spread the volunteers out all over? Are you able to do that?
Yeah, we're very fortunate. We have one special volunteer who lives down in Bayview, and that's our most southernmost point. And then we try and monitor a good amount of the sloughs. And we work with the Department of Environmental Quality to determine where our monitoring sites are. We have 13 this year, but we've had, you know, like 15 or 16 in the past. And so just depending on kind of nutrient loads and other developmental impacts that we want to monitor. So we can adjust our sites like that. And some sites we've only had for a few years. Some are new this year. Some we've had the whole 10 years. So it's, most of them are on the northern end of the lake. But we do have a few kind of in that long section of the southern end.
Yeah, and you're mentioning that this year some of the results are above average temps. And how about nutrients? Are nutrient loads up within the lake, or
We haven't noticed yet this year. I'm interested to see our August results after getting two harmful algae blooms and our sloughs earlier this month, to see what the nutrient levels are. We did have some high bacteria levels last year, but they weren't, we generally have really low bacteria levels. So it was nothing of public concern to be look out for, thankfully. But I think temperature has been the biggest impact, and with increased temperatures, decreased dissolved oxygen. But you know, we haven't been alerted of any fish kills in our lake yet, so. There's plenty of water to go around.
So what if we missed any other events coming up or topics you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think land use issues is one of our biggest things. And so if anyone has any questions about development and kind of building around the lake and have to be a steward of the water, I'd love if they were able to reach out to us and, you know, ask how can they help? How can they kind of help spread the word? And, you know, planting shoreline vegetation and stuff. I love talking to people about that and educating people. So if anyone has any questions, please reach out. I love to chat.
I think that's a wonderful suggestion, but beyond that, I would like to ask you a question. I hope you might know the answer, but you know, as we are having increased development and it's along shorelines and it's near water, more and more people, and of course we know that puts a heavy burden on water and risks greater pollution than we're used to, and this, you know, the county and the city, I don't think the guidelines are extremely rigorous. Does Waterkeeper have a position on that? Are they advocating for a change in land use requirements for people that are near water? How is that going?
We are looking into kind of diving deeper into like Bonner County Code and City Code to better study and understand the development rules and kind of how someone goes from buying a property to developing on it and then grandfathering properties in and kind of advocating for better legislation within our watershed. And so that is something that we're really hoping to get into and raise more awareness about and kind of get more citizen backing on as well.
Yeah, it seems to me that'd be a great place for you to spend a little time and energy because we are growing like crazy and would hate to have water quality impacted before we could prevent, you know, something severe.
There's so many things going on. And as you have new events or new information or stuff, especially related to your monthly online event, let us know. We always welcome to have you back for a full or a partial interview. As we return to in-studio guests, sometimes that's easier to do like a short bit, but we can always zoom in too.
Yes, Carolyn's kind of kitty corner across the street from our studio, so it'd be easy to get you over there when we're able.
Yes, I'd love that.
So, well, go ahead.
Okay, well, I think we're going to wrap up, Phil, and as we conclude our KRFY community conversations and somewhat morning show, because I'll be there next Tuesday. I'd like to thank Carolyn Knock, Associate Director of Waterkeeper. Thank you, Carolyn, for joining us today. It's been a really interesting program. So happy to know that Waterkeeper is keeping track of what's happening on water, recording it so that we have evidence to know what's happening on our big, beautiful lake. I thank you for talking to us about that and joining us. And for folks that are tuning in and listening to KRFY, thank you for listening. If you're not a member, we would encourage you to become a member. We need you. We're a volunteer organization, just as is the Waterkeeper, and I hope you'll continue listening. Thank you all for joining us. This has been Phil and Julie for Community Conversations.